Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Kala Campbell. We are going to say thank you for joining us at this time. So here we are on another Saturday. And I was contemplating as to what my topic would be today for our show. And so I began to think about the fact that we are in the month of February with regards to Black History Month. And I thought, hey, why not talk about the women that have been inspirational to me throughout my development and throughout my life? And as you know, we're standing upon the shoulders of giants who have already gone before us, who have come before us. And so tonight, this evening, I thought I'd just talk about the women who inspired me and why. And I know when I opened the show up, 5 weeks ago now, I mentioned and I asked the question, who inspired you? What woman has inspired you? In what way did they have an impact on you? And so tonight, I just thought it would be appropriate for me to talk about the Black women who have inspired me. number one, as a writer and as a poet, the first person that comes to mind, and many people mention her, quote her, I would like to talk about Maya Angelou for a minute, because I've had the chance to meet this woman in person. And I want to say it was around the same time when I first published or sold some of my work to Essence Magazine. And that was the same year in which the movie Poetic Justice was it just come out. It was a brand new movie of Poetic Justice, and Maya Angelou was in that film, and she had a lot of influence over the film, as well as her poetry that was being read in the film by Janet Jackson. It was the same year in which I met her in person at the Harvard Bookstore Cafe in Boston. And so that encounter really made an impression on me as a poet, as a writer, but really just as a young person who really admired her work, because I've read I Know Why the Cage Bird Sings. I'd read a number of her poems, Phenomenal Woman, which we quote a lot, right? And so that was a really powerful experience to be able to have a conversation with her. And not only meeting her once, but I met her twice. So I met her again in Houston, Texas, when she was a guest speaker and she came in. She was the keynote speaker. And having that opportunity to be in her presence once again. So Maya Angelou, she makes this quote of, I come as one, but I stand as 10,000. And that quote has been with me, has resonated with me in different spaces and places that I have found myself in. So oftentimes alone, but I soon realized, according to her quote, which made a lot of sense, yes, you are here, but you're not alone, because there are many who have come before you. And so, yes, we come as one, but we stand as 10,000. So I just wanted to mention Maya Angelou as a woman who inspired me, a Black woman, African-American woman, and her struggles and her experience, her life experience, which was very rich. The next woman as a writer, because I'm coming to you from my own personal experience, as a writer and poet, is Nikki Giovanni. Now, Nikki Giovanni is someone that, as a child, I read a lot of her poems. I've read a number of her works. As a matter of fact, I was recently gifted an album by a friend of mine as a gift, Nikki Giovanni's album that was published, I believe, back in the early 70s. Don't quote me on that. I'll have to look at it again, but I know it's one of her early works. And who is a brilliant poet, a performance poet. I just wanted to make mention of her because those two women impact me the most when it comes to my own inspiration and style and ways in which I also write my poetry. And so the next woman that I would like to talk about and mention as a teacher, because I've been teaching now for the last 14 years, but it's amazing how life has a way of bringing you where you need to be. I remember as a high school student how a mentor teacher of mine said I should teach. And I said, no, teachers don't make money. And that was my response to her. But lo and behold, later, much later, I began to teach. It's amazing how you'll find yourself placed right where you need to be. And sometimes we'll say, okay, I wish I had done that a long time ago. But when you're utilizing the gifts and talents that have been given to you, those moments will come and you will be given another opportunity to express those gifts that are implanted. And so as a teacher, my first encounter was with a woman named Patricia Bassett from Phoenix, Arizona, who since has been deceased. She's passed away. But Patricia Bassett was a mentor of mine in Phoenix, Arizona. She was the founder of the Omega Schools in Phoenix, Arizona. And Patricia Bassett was the next person to say to me, Ms. Campbell, have you thought about teaching? And once again, I said, no, I don't think that's for me. However, this woman saw something in me, and she asked, Ms. Campbell, at our conference, could you please speak to our teachers here with regards to teaching and what teaching is all about and how teachers should have a little bit more empathy for, especially for students of color. And so she wanted me to share the story of Marva Collins, who I was very familiar with that history. And so Marva Collins would be another person that I admire. Because of what she managed to accomplish in the city of Chicago. And so I began to share that story about Marva Collins, the educator, who turned things around for students of color. Marva Collins was born August 31st, 1936, and she passed away June 24th, 2015. And she was an American educator. Collins is best known for creating the Westside Preparatory Schools, in which Dr. Bassett had a lot of, she was inspired by this woman to begin her charter school of Omega Academy, Omega Schools in Phoenix. And so Marva Collins started this school as a private elementary school in the impoverished Garfield Park neighborhoods of Chicago, which opened in 1975. She was dismayed at the low levels of learning that she felt some students were experiencing in particular areas. And so Collins took out a $5,000 loan, and she began her own school from her home. And so the school that she started was called Westside Preparatory School, and it's an educational and commercial, with an educational and commercial success. And this put Marva Collins on the map as a prestigious educator who educated these students in her home in a one room. And those students went on to graduate from college and go to some pretty prestigious schools. So I thought I'd mention her because it took a lot of courage to do what she did by leaving the public school systems and beginning her own. And the same thing that happened with Patricia Bassett. And we're in a day and time in which education, the education of students of color is on the brink. And there's some intercession that is taking place in terms of our educating our students of color, especially black males of color. African-American males, excuse me. So anyway, those three women in particular, but I also would like to mention Bell Hooks. Now, Bell Hooks was an educator, but what I could relate to Bell Hooks and her stories and how she grew up, you know, as someone who's growing up in the 1960s, and as she put it, you know, her home, that, you know, her family, her father, her mother, that household and the structure of that household, I could pretty much relate to Bell Hooks. But Bell Hooks and her brilliance has also been placed on the map as a great educator. And her works have been utilized on at numerous universities and colleges. And she was just a brilliant woman who unfortunately passed away a few years back now. And so these women have made an impact on me as an individual, as an artist, as a poet. And so I just wanted to talk about how these women of color have made an impact on our society. The another woman that I'm going to bring up, and I'm quite sure many of us know who she is, and that is Fannie Lou Hamer, the civil rights activist. And the civil rights during the civil rights movement, this woman was very active in making sure that people were able to get out to vote. She was passionate in her ways of dealing with the oppression of Jim Crow in the South. In 1964, working with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, SNCC, as it was called back in that time, Hamer helped organize the 1964 Freedom Summer African American Voters Registration Drive in her native town in Mississippi. At the Democratic National Convention later that year, she was part of the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party, an integrated group of activists who openly challenged the legality of Mississippi's all-white segregated delegation. And so Ms. Hamer was inspired by this, and she decided that she was going to do something about it, that she was not going to sit down and just pray about it. I believe there's a powerful quote that she makes a statement where she says, you know, that we could pray all day, but you need to get up and do something. You got to get up and do something about it, right? And so this is the life of Fannie Lou Hamer, who was bold enough and brave enough to get up and do something about it. She said, you can pray all day, but till you get up, God is not going to put it in your lap. And so this woman took it upon herself to get out there and make a difference. And so this is another woman that I truly admire, Fannie Lou Hamer, who didn't sit back, but she got up and did something about it. The next person I would like to mention is Angela Davis. And I know a number of people see Angela Davis as, you know, very, at that time back in the 60s, she was a pretty radical woman. This was a woman who was accused. I believe she was a part of the Black Panther movement as well. And this was a woman who was sent to prison. But she spoke out, and she spoke out boldly against injustice in her community and in the nation. And so Angela Davis is another one that I thought I'd mention, because she too has inspired me. I remember reading some of her works, even though it was dealing with, you know, Black liberation for women. But she's a very powerful individual who I also had the opportunity to sit in her presence about, back in 2021, at East LA Community College, and I sat in to listen to her lecture. Very prominent, very powerful woman. where her quote, I recently used it, where she says, I am no longer accepting the things I cannot change. I'm changing the things I cannot accept. And that's a pretty powerful statement. And so we're very aware of the prayer that I believe is a Saint Christopher, Saint August prayer, accepting the things that I cannot change and the difference and the wisdom to know the difference. We know that quote. But this one here is about action, taking action. When she says, I am changing the things I cannot accept. So anyways, I just wanted to mention Angela Davis, all these great women whose shoulders I know without a shadow of a doubt that I'm standing on. These are educators. These are inspirational women who gave their voice, lent their voices to the community. And I just thought it would be fitting for me to just honor some of them today. And maybe next Saturday I'll do the same. But I just want you to understand how this has impacted, these women have impacted me as an individual. And so also there's this woman, another woman I would like to mention, make mention of. And I came in encounter with this person when I was in high school, of her story, and I watched a documentary of her story, and her name is Maude Collin. And Maude Collin was a midwife in Mississippi. This woman, she would travel to various homes to help deliver babies. But she was also, as a nurse, she would go to those places where the elderly couldn't get out. She would go to places where if they were crippled or if they were disabled, she would go and visit those people to make sure they were getting proper care. But she was mostly known for her midwifery. And so Maude Collin was a nurse midwife and public health nurse in Pineville, Berkeley County, South Carolina. Born in 1898 and orphaned at the age of 7, she trained in Georgia infirmary. When she and her husband settled in Pineville, she built a two-room in addition to her home to serve as a clinic for the surrounding community. In the time when transportation was less available, the nearby hospital was 22 miles away and the nearest doctor was 10 miles away. Besides this, many Black people experienced discrimination in the white-run hospitals, so they preferred staying at home. This was also true of birthing mothers. A formerly trained registered nurse, she started programs to teach midwives and started prenatal classes and organized health clinics and went into the schools to vaccinate children, hundreds of children. And so, and I take that back. Please forgive me. Yes, here she was in South Carolina. So I want to make sure I'm stating my facts here. And so in 1951, Eugene Smith, a photographer from Time magazine, followed Maude Collins through all of her activities, taking pictures, and the result was a stunning photo essay in Time magazine, touching readers from all over. People sent Maude over 18,000, which she used to build a health clinic in Pineville. So she received a lot of money to establish her clinic. She received the support that she needed. And just imagine that. That's during Jim Crow, segregated South. And look at the accomplishment and the fact that she wasn't doing it for the money. She was doing it to help her people. She wasn't doing it for the recognition. She was doing it to help her people. And so she worked tirelessly through her life, and not only directly helping women giving birth or those who were sick, but training other women to be midwives as well. Those who remember her credit her with delivering hundreds of babies and helping thousands of people, Maude Collins. And I wrote a poem in her honor because I was so inspired by her story. And here is the poem. I have walked the swampy grounds of the Mississippi, carrying my lantern, letting my light shine on dark roads and misty mornings. Undying love for my people, unwavering faith to care for the sick, to care for the dying. I have given my handkerchiefs to flooded tears, to flooded eyes, soothed aching bones, and washed dirty feet. I have been over muddy hills and swampy places. I have walked many miles from my home and back. Somebody asked me one day, Maude, don't you get tired? I just said, no, I don't get tired. Can't afford to. My feet hurt every now and then, but I don't ever get tired. And so that's the poem that I wrote for in honor of Maude Collins, that she doesn't get tired because she's on a mission. She has a calling that's greater than herself. Maude Collins. And then we look at Mava, and can we make this comparison as well? Mava Collins. Mava Collins, spelled with C-O-L-L-I-N-S. And then we have Maude Collins, spelled with C-A-L-L-E-N-S. Maude Collins. So I thought I'd make that comparison, and seeing that these two great women who sacrificed themselves and gave up their own time and their home and just to make their community a better place to be in. Can you imagine that? Speaking of community, yes, today I attended an NAACP meeting to which I was installed as a leader for our young people here in at the college. And so while I was there, I was paying attention to a number of the people that were in that group, and I had the opportunity to meet the founder for the NAACP chapter here in Aurora that was established over 30 years ago. And once again, it was a Black woman who had given up her time and given of her life to help make things better for people of color here in Aurora, Colorado. I was really impressed and inspired by her. And sitting in that meeting and listening to the great leaders of this community to fight for justice, to fight for equality, it's an ongoing fight. And so once I left that meeting today, I decided, okay, you know what? I see where I'm being led. I see where I'm going. My vision has been made clear. And so As I come to you this evening with regards to my topic, because this is something I chose to talk about, why am I talking about Black women who inspired me? And so this is the reason why. And because of that inspiration, this is how I find myself walking in the shadows of those who have come before me, walking in the shadows of that of a Maya Angelou, walking in the shadows of that of a Mava Collins, speaking out for justice with regards to our educational system, all systems actually, but because I'm in the educational system, I just feel that it is important for me to also lend my voice and speak out to make sure that all students are receiving the fair education that they so deserve. And so I was also honored a few weeks back at the Martin Luther King brunch, in which I was given the Martin Luther King Jr. Spirit Award, and I was quite surprised and stunned at the same time. But once again, people, this is why I'm here. I'm here to do the work. I'm here to be a light. I'm here to lend my voice and to lend, and not lend, it's not mine, it's to lend. That belongs to God, right? So, but for me to be, to use my voice in the way that will be productive, to use my gifts and talents in a way that would be productive, that will benefit someone else, that is greater than me, greater than I am, right? And so anyways, so these are some of the women that have inspired me. I can even go back and talk about my grandmother, who also inspired me in many, many, many ways, and all the little conversations and some of the education of letting me know, you know, about my family and the roots, and those roots are deep. And so she is someone that I think about often, and she's always in my heart. But I've learned a great deal from her. She used to share poetry with me. I was surprised that she knew poetry. She could recite poems that she learned, as she put it, as a little girl, when she had to learn how to recite poems. That's what they used to do when they were able to go to school, when they did go to school. And so that inspired me, and I think that had an impact on me today as a poet, as a writer, because of her knowledge and her influence. And so it's so important that we learn to stick together, that we learn to work together, that we learn to appreciate one another and learn to appreciate each other's gifts and talents, because not all of us are gifted to do certain things. Not all of us are gifted to be an Oprah. Not all of us are gifted to be a Beyonce or whatever that might be. but we are gifted to do what we need to do within our own communities, and to recognize that and to share that. And so I just thought it would be an awesome conversation tonight to talk about that, and how the women have made a great impact on much of the movement that we have experienced as a people, from the civil rights movement. We can always go all the way back to slavery and the women who put their lives on the line of escaping, right? Such as Harriet Tubman. We talk about Harriet Tubman. We talk about Sojourner Truth and her impact on the women's liberation movement. Her poem, that her speech, not a poem, but speech, Ain't I a Woman, was published thousands of times over. This is a woman who was a slave. She was not formally trained. She did not have an education. She did not hold a degree, any of that. This was just a woman who was plain speaking and yet speaking the truth. And so she is another woman that, you know, who inspire me, and I'm quite sure inspire many of you who are familiar with their stories. And it's these type of stories that need to be told, and we need to keep them, keep those stories and share those stories as much as we keep those stories alive as much as we possibly can. Because in some ways and in some areas, those stories are being jeopardized. Those stories are wanting to be edited and change. And so it's important that we cling to that and hold fast to it, to not allow those stories to dissipate, to not vanish, to not be censored, closed off. We must find a way to keep the truth moving forward. And so Sojourner Truth, Harriet Tubman, the women of the civil rights movement, Fannie Lou Hamer, as I mentioned, who also made the statement, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. A lot of people make that quote, but that quote came from her. or people like Angela Davis, who have been in the forefront of the civil rights movement as well, though she was viewed as someone who was very radical. We can name all these people, all these women, all these, you know, our ancestors who have come and gone before us. So when I say sisterhood, holding on ultimately to truth, to shout out the truth, wherever we are, to shout the truth and to make sure that the truth is known, not just for ourselves, but for future generations to come. We must consider that. How are we informing our young people today? How are we managing and disseminating information to them so that they too can feel proud and hopeful in knowing that, yes, our ancestors did it, we can do it too. And the only way we can do it is to get involved. As John Lewis, the great senator John Lewis, says, getting into good trouble. So we must move forward in acknowledging this. Sisterhood. And what does that mean in the African American community? Sisterhood. The women who paved the way. The women who established organizations and weren't afraid to get up and fight. The women who, in spite of the odds, said, no, I'm going to make a change. I'm not accepting that. I'm going to change it because I don't have to accept it. The influences of those people, our ancestors, those who came before us. We want to leave something behind so that those who are coming after us will continue to fight the fight. And so, as I come before you this evening, I was pondering and thinking about, okay, what, there were a couple of things I wanted to talk about, and I said, no, I think this is more appropriate. And given the events of the day and sitting down with some of the elders in that room this afternoon, I was really inclined to just talk about these people who have given so much. And so as we move forward, I also would like to make mention of some of the greats that we already know. Of course, we know about Rosa Parks. We know that story, but so many people did not know that this woman was a member of the NAACP before she sat on that bus. She was already involved. She was already an activist. So there are so many things that we can look at in our communities alone. Just look at the women in your communities alone, the women that are out there doing food drives, making sure people are fed, giving clothing drives. Many of your fraternities and your sororities, I'll say, your Alpha Kappa Alpha. I mean, those organizations were founded by Black women in 1908. Alpha Kappa Alpha, the Delta Sigmas, and they were all founded 1908. And interestingly enough, the same time as the NAACP, 1908, 1909. So people were coming up in the ranks, and women were involved. Very much so, long before the voters' rights, Black women were involved. The voters' rights, 1920, you know, where women were given officially the right to vote. But look at what these black women did in 1908, of establishing these fraternities and organizations for the sake of the community, for the sake of the community being able to thrive under oppression. Jim Crow, just coming out of Reconstruction. Look at what they have done. It's phenomenal. Phenomenal. Amazing what they have accomplished. And so those are the shoulders that I know I stand on. I don't have any doubts in my mind as to where I am. And I know it's by faith for me. I can't speak for everyone with regards to your belief systems, but for me, it's by faith. And I know that they too overcame because of their faith. They too overcame because they came together as a community. They too overcame because they were leaning on each other. And as a community, they were able to come through. And I am hopeful and believe that even for this day and time, we can do the same. Come through the police brutality, where young black men's lives are at stake. Come through the political environment of inequality in our education system. Coming through the inequalities in our medical systems. Those were great giants, and those were powerful shoulders that are holding us up today. And we must be mindful of the fact that those shoulders are still standing strong and still standing firm. And so, yes, it's African American History Month. Yes, we can disseminate the information as to what our ancestors have done and how far we've come and where we are today, not just decades ago, but today in the 21st century, where we are today, where are we ranking in our communities economically. There are people still fighting. There are still people, there's a woman right now here in Colorado who is fighting to keep her land here in Colorado. She's a cattle rancher as well, but she's fighting to keep her land. Then you ask the question, when does it end? That a black woman who owns land and property has to fight to keep what she has, that rightfully belongs to her. This is a part of our, unfortunately, this is where we're living and these are the times. And there are many who are fighting for justice, fighting for our rights. And I'm hopeful because I see how many people have come on board to say, hey, let's make this happen. And that's what we're going to have to do. And so anyways, I just wanted to say to you, the audience, whether you're home cooking and getting ready for dinner, and maybe some of you, you know, ending out your day, having dinner with your family, I just want to say to you today, if you've been discouraged, don't be discouraged. Be encouraged. It's going to get better. We have to make it better. We can't just keep our eyes on how bad it is out here. We can't say, oh, it's getting worse. I would like to say, as it gets worse, this is a time for a light to be shined. And so women who have inspired me, women of color in this case, because I'm talking about women of color, Black and white women have inspired me, but I'm talking about women of color today because that is the community in which I'm coming from. Have there been other women who have inspired me and pushed me? Yes, absolutely. Outside of my community, yes. But I want to honor my ancestors today. And so I would like to read to you a poem. It's called Woman. And it was something that I wrote to talk about the liberation. I was pretty much just using the story of Esther as an example, but I pretty much was using this as an example of how women have risen out of the ashes, have come through the trenches, and are deserving of honor. Woman, here we go. Embrace yourself. Send greetings to morning and let yesterday be forgotten. Radiant you are, O precious one. Sequin yourself at night. Satin yourself down. Lay your head on fine silk. Precious linen. Call out to Lebanon. Breathe in the sweet smell of honeysuckle. Lavish yourself in lavender. Come out in the morning sunlight singing. Lyrics of praise. O woman, thou art radiant. You who birthed Egypt by the Nile. You who vicariously birthed forth the Tower of Babel. You who was too busy replenishing the earth to watch it fall. And when your enemies rose up against you, you birthed forth Gad and replied, a troop cometh. You, who are fine in every unique way, created to receive and give again, careful you must be of what is placed inside of you, giver of life, a woman of destiny, on the path, on the move. Out of your womb came a rock. The rock of all ages, establishing his kingdom and removing all nations. Woman, thou art. Woman. All right. So I will take a few minutes and I'll open up the channel. You are more than free to call in. Let's get some people in. Anyone who wants to share or make a comment or just give us a call. I'm here. The number here is 646-668-8217. If there's anyone that you would like to honor, that would be great. Because when I first started this show, that's what we did. We talked about honoring those that have impacted us. But today, yes, I am focused in on African-American women who have made an impact on society, who have made an impact on our communities. And so would love to hear from you. If you know anyone who would be interested in calling in, have them give us a call. In the meantime, I would like to talk about another woman that I am impressed with, and has really, her writings have been pretty profound. Her works have been used 10 times over. Oprah Winfrey has utilized her works in Broadway, writing this beautiful, beautiful novel and creating it as a play, and that is Alice Walker. The Color Purple. And every time I read The Color Purple, I get something different out of it every time. That is a very profound and very prophetic book. Alice Walker, who I also had the opportunity to meet when in Boston years ago. I want to say shortly after the Maya Angelou encounter, but at Northeastern University, where I had the opportunity to come. Her book, Temple of My Familiar, was out at the time and had that opportunity. So that was awesome. That was really awesome. And so I say all this, guys, because you know what? You just never know where you're being placed, because sometimes you're being placed in and strategically put in these places. And it's like, you know, God is like giving you a hint that, hey, this is where you need to be. And sometimes we don't pay attention to those hints. But when I go back over my life and I look at that, those were hints that were sending me and propelling me to where I need to be in my life. Didn't know it at the time, but now when I look back at it and I trace those dots and make those connections, it's true. He was setting me up. As a matter of fact, and I think I mentioned it, the same year that Maya Angelou, when I encountered that visit with Maya Angelou, that was the same year Essence Magazine bought my poems, the same year. And the magazine was used in the movie, Poetic Justice. It was used as a prop. And when I went to watch the film and I saw this particular magazine in the movie as a prop, I was shocked. I was, at that time, shocked. But now when I look back at it, no, that was by divine order. It was divine order that I met her at that time, not knowing what was going to happen. It was divine order that she was going to be the influencer of that movie. And all of her writings would be, some of her writings would be the influence of the poems for that show, for that movie, sorry. It was by divine order that that magazine happened to be in that movie at that time that she helped produce and that she wrote for. Not knowing that, see. So these things happen in segments, in episodes, and we have no clue. So that's why I say to you, keep doing what you're doing. Use your gifts, use your talents, use your abilities, and you never know where it's going to take you. So once again, if anyone wants to call in, I'm going to go ahead and take this call. Caller, are you there?
Yes. Yes, I am here.
How you doing?
I am fantastic. And the thing that is, it has me reminiscing.
Mm-hmm.
It has me going back and looking at the person. The one female that impressed me the most was Dr. Frances Quest Wilson.
Mm.
She and I worked together at a community mental health center at a time when she just started talking about white supremacy.
Mm.
And her analysis of it from a social psychological perspective is more alive today than it was before while she was alive. And it's just awesome. And what I have done was transfer that to theology. Theology.
Mm-hmm.
And I predict that eventually it's not a womanist or feminist theology, it's theology. I predict that the theology will be rewritten. I might not be here to see it, but it will be rewritten in a way that's more reflective of reality.
Okay. And what is her name again?
Frances Quest Wilson.
Okay.
She was a child psychiatrist out of Chicago. I think her father was a doctor. One of her parents was a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
She worked on community mental health center. And there are two quotes that she used to make. One, she was employed as a psychiatrist in the poverty program. And she said that this, I haven't forgotten whether it was a male or female now, it's been so long. That was in 1970s, in early 70s, probably 70, 71. And she said this person, he did analysis of him, the write-up, evaluation. The person said, if I could only find the keys to the color, I'd be all right.
If I can find the keys to the color?
Colors.
Ooh, okay.
Okay, he would be, I'm not sure now, that they would be all right. And she put down schizoid, paranoid type. And there was another one. Oh, that was the man. The lady she did the write-up on, her thing was that, I'm not poverty. She put down the same diagnosis. What they were saying was more reality than her analysis revealed.
Okay.
The poverty program, what do they call it? War on poverty, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about minorities. And as they were saying that she was not poverty, therefore, don't know why they having a war on her. And that told me how the system is reinforcing the image that they want that they want society to believe or relate to.
Wow.
So that's I have a book, probably the last week, last Sunday this month, I probably will mention her.
Okay,
but
that sounds
that
great.
That was one contemporary that I worked with that had a significant impact. And the only other one, I'm about to say only, the other one would be my grandmama. And the prayer ministry on Wednesday nights that I spearhead is direct response to what she did. But enough friends to pray every Wednesday night.
Okay, sounds good.
And then, yeah, and Rosa Parks, I met her niece, was a member of the church that we were a member of in Columbia, Maryland. And I think it was Owen Brown United Methodist Church. And she came to visit her niece, and that's when I met her.
Okay. So they're two great people.
Yeah, and they have a great person following their footsteps.
Yes. So you're
thank you
you're
for
carrying,
recognizing.
You're
thank
carrying
you
it
for
forward.
Recognizing.
Thank you for recognizing. Who are you talking about? I thought you were talking about.
I'm talking about you.
Oh.
Most people don't make the connection and keep it alive and keep it moving. And that's what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, we have to. That's another conversation. So, we have to. You know, and some people don't know it. And unfortunately, some people don't know that history. But yet, there are so many young people who are crying out for that history.
That's right.
You know, they say, hey, we want our history told. We want to know the truth. So, yes, you're absolutely right.
The fact that the governor in Florida has marginalized and denied our existence as a being in this society, period. We had made no contribution to the United States of America.
Yeah. Wow. Well, my time.
Mary McLeod Bethune. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
And Mary McLeod Bethune. She started a college, and Mary's a college down there in Florida, Bethune-Cookman.
Yes.
Because they denied blacks the ability to go to white schools, so, hey, she started her own.
Yeah. Yeah, she did. Yeah. But many of them have. Many of them have started their own out of necessity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, hey, I'm going to shut it down. And I'm going to sign off. And I want to say thank you. And you guys, thank you for listening. For those of you who were listening, have a good evening. Peace and blessings to you.
Thank you, and same to you.